Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
So this was in our news yesterday. PETA obtained some of the documents that came from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It was an inspection report that showed four citations against Sequest at the Trumbull Mall, one of which was an employee who hit otters with a metal bowl, and another saying that a child was bitten by an otter. And joining me this morning to talk a little bit about this is Michelle Sinnott, who is with PETA. She's the Associate Director and Council of Captive Animal Law Enforcement. And Michelle, welcome to the show. I mean, are you shocked at these allegations, citations against Sequest?
For having me, Melissa. And, no, we're not shocked at all. Mm-hmm. Sequest is a chain of hands-on shopping mall aquariums that profit from rampant and reckless contact with wild animals. And the company evidently can't go more than a few months without racking up another citation for violating the Federal Animal Welfare Act. Most recently, a USDA inspection report from the chain's Trumbull location, as you just noted, revealed that an employee hit otters with a metal bowl and that an otter once again bit a child. And these new citations follow five other recent citations at the chain's Texas location, which also included children being bitten by animals. So the animals trapped and harassed at these facilities are going to continue to suffer so long as people buy tickets.
And you know, what's interesting, Michelle, is before Sequest came to Connecticut, because this is the first location, I think, even in the East Coast, there were a lot of people, animal advocates, I think even well beyond PETA, who were very against them coming to Connecticut, specifically because of the cases that have been called out at their Southern and West Coast locations. I'm interested to see, specifically talking about Trumbull, because not that we can't get involved with the other cases across the country, but of course, we're focused on Connecticut. Do you see them surviving in Trumbull, Connecticut with, just these citations that have been uncovered? Do you see Sequest actually surviving?
You know, hitting animals is a new low for Sequest, but that kind of abuse comes no surprise given what we've seen at other locations. And this is a chain, mind you. So what we're seeing at other locations is indicative of what's likely happening at the Trumbull location. It may just be that we're not seeing those reports come forward from the USDA yet. We're not having the whistleblowers come out yet from Connecticut like we've had, for example, from Las Vegas, who've reported that birds have been stepped on and killed, turtles have been crushed by children, and an octopus died after being boiled alive in the tank. So maybe that's not come out yet from Sequest Trumbull, but given what we've seen at other locations, it would not surprise me if that type of action was going on. And it's abusive and a violation of the Federal Animal Welfare Act to handle animals by hitting them with a metal bowl and to not protect both the animals and the public from these animals during these types of interactions. So a child being bitten by an otter, this isn't the first time that a child has been bitten by an otter at this location. In 2019, a 12-year-old was bitten by an otter at Sequest. So
in Trumbull?
Only concern in Trumbull.
So this is separate than the citation you're talking about.
Correct. So this is not the first time we've seen children injured by animals at Sequest Trumbull. Wild animals don't want to be touched and harassed by the public. And so long as Sequest continues to allow rampant and reckless contact with these animals, people will continue to get hurt.
Michelle Sinnott is here with PETA. I'm curious, Michelle, and why, if these citations have been proven, why is Sequest even in business anymore? Like, I'm just curious. That's not to be vindictive. I'm just curious, like, how can a place that has citations proving that children have been in danger or that animals have not been treated well, how are they still in business?
So roadside zoos and, shady shopping mall aquariums like Sequest, have very low standards of animal welfare, and they're often allowed to stay in business even after repeatedly violating federal animal welfare laws for years. And the USDA is the federal agency that's tasked with ensuring the humane care and treatment of animals mm-hmm. used for exhibition. And it's their responsibility to take action when exhibitors violate the Animal Welfare Act. Now, there's a range of things that they can do, the lowest being issue a citation, which is what happened here, which the USDA inspection report that came out, that's a citation that Sequest Trumbull received from the USDA.
But other than, like, calling them out, Michelle, like, what does that really do? What does the citation even do?
So the citation, it's a record of a violation of the Federal Animal Welfare Act. And, for example, I'm sure most of your listeners or bulk of your listeners have probably watched Tiger King during the pandemic.
Sure.
People have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a prime example of how the type of behavior and violations of animal welfare, the violations of the Animal Welfare Act are allowed to continue, often allowed to continue for years before the USDA steps in and does anything. And even in a case like that, it wasn't the USDA that ultimately stepped in to shut down what was happening. It was the Fish and Wildlife Service. There was a murder for hire charge. There were other things going on
that
eventually stopped that behavior. So I think it's important to recognize that, you know, when the USDA issues a citation, there's clear evidence that that facility is not meeting the bare minimum. These are minimal standards, minimum standards that the federal law requires. But it's going to take, it usually takes the USDA, it takes years before the USDA takes aggressive action, if at all, to shut these types of places down. That is why it is imperative for your listeners and, you know, the general public to know that for facilities that have these types of citations, for facilities like Sequest that are allowing these types of rampant and reckless contact with wild animals, your ticket is supporting this abuse. So stop buying a ticket. Don't go to these facilities, and talk to your friends and family who are considering going to these facilities and tell them what you know and tell them not to go to these facilities.
Mm. Michelle Sinnott, who is with PETA, the Associate Director and Counsel of Captive Animal Law Enforcement, thank you for coming on and sharing this information with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa. It's been a pleasure.
Fran Mako with AAA, what in the world is going on with gas prices? I mean, I know, but good Lord, did you see this coming?
We enjoyed lower prices for more than a year because of the pandemic. And now things are changing, but ain't America great? This is the capitalistic system in action at its best.
Yeah, all good things must come to an end, I guess.
Yeah, right now we all know the Colonial Pipeline. It's a very major pipeline from Texas to New York Harbor. It's about 5,000 miles. I may have that wrong. Yeah, about 5,500 miles long, and it transports about 45% of our fuel to the Northeast. And because of a cyber attack, they proactively took the pipeline off line. I guess it was some kind of organization that took their information and wants a ransom for it.
Yeah, the details still seem very hairy to me. I'm not buying everything I'm hearing. But yes, you're essentially correct. Yeah, there was a malware attack, and now we're kind of having it held hostage. So now our prices are up.
So because of that, the pipeline is shut down. The longer the pipeline is shut down, the more effect it's going to have on us. Mm-hmm. I understand that they manually started one of the lines. There are some offshoots to that main line. But until this is all sorted out, we are probably going to see some increases in prices. Today, Connecticut hit $3.02. It went up a penny since yesterday. It went up 7 cents. Since last week. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, that's a huge jump.
But in the meantime, you know, prices, I don't know if people remember because our memories are very, very short. Since the beginning of the year, prices have been going up very slowly, simply because states are relaxing their COVID restrictions and more people are out and about and there's this pent-up desire to travel. This pipeline situation just happened to bring it to light now, and really it's a lot more pronounced. It's a lot more higher. But we're on the cusp of the summer drive season with Memorial Day, and I suspect people have been home so long, they don't care how much gas is.
True.
Going to go places.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think you bring up a great point, framework of AAA. The fact is yes, the pipeline definitely is what's bumping things so quickly. But I think we've been very slowly kind of touching on it, even with you on the show, actually. We've been sort of talking about and hinting like, listen, you know, we're going to be seeing trends of more people wanting to travel. And I think every summer, right. Please correct me if I'm wrong, you know, we start to see higher crude oil prices. There's more demand and people wanting to travel. So this is somewhat typical. We just have never seen this high of breaking the $3 mark in a couple of years. So that's kind of the shocker. But it's not too out of the ordinary that we're higher than usual, correct?
Yep, that's right. The last time we broke the $3 mark was in early May of 2019. So isn't that too far?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't believe we are going to hit $4. I mean, the last time we hit $4 a gallon was way back in 2008.
I remember that. That was crazy.
I think it was the banking crisis. Again, my memory isn't that good. But, you know, again, what goes up has to come down eventually. You know, you have to remember, it's when I say the summer drive season, they're in the middle of converting from the winter blends to the more expensive summer blends. That has something to do with it. Crude oil prices are going up. Then this pipeline goes offline. If we get to $3.20, $3.25, mm-hmm. I mean, we've done it before. And a lot of times we've never said boo, but I just think the fact that's saving a lot of people is the fact that we've got this pent-up demand to travel. Now, the stats came out for the travel numbers for Memorial Day. They're saying about 37 million folks are going to be hitting the road or even flying. And I'm just going to pull up my data here. It says here about more than 37 million folks, which is a 60% increase over last year.
Sure.
It's going to be bigger over last year because nobody went anywhere.
Nobody went anywhere.
But it's 13% below 2019. So it's rebounding, but not as high.
Sure, because we still got some nervous people. That's that's expected. Okay. All right.
And out of the 37 million, 34 million are going to travel by car.
Sure.
So, again, you know, Memorial Day has always been a road trip, a family road trip type thing.
Sure.
So it's just not as high, but we're going to see a lot more people on the road. I mean, I was out and about yesterday afternoon, and I was amazed midday the number of people on the road.
You're speaking my language. I feel like most days as I drive down to Fairfield to pick up my son after work, it's astonishing to me that starting at 11 o'clock, the Merritt Parkway is a parking lot. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It was not like that for over a year. And now I just find that I'm like praying every time I get my car. Oh, please get me to this house in 15 minutes and not 50 minutes. It's unbelievable. It's amazing.
Doesn't it annoy you now?
Yeah, it drives me nuts. And I think,
like,
oh, okay, so there was one good thing that came out of the pandemic, and it was that no one drove. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Now, Fran, I might be, you know, asking you something that is totally, you know, more for like a fortune teller, but when would you ballpark? I mean, you have watched these things happen so many times. When do you think we will get back down to a reasonable price for gas? And do you think it really has to, it comes down to the pipeline, really, like when that comes back online?
Well, reasonable is a relative term.
True.
I don't know what you mean by reasonable.
Not over $3.
I give it until mid-May, end of May, depending on how, how long it's going to take them to get the pipeline back. Once they get the pipeline back, I understand that it'll be another 3 weeks for the residual effects for us to feel, you know, to feel that. And there's all these reports that there's fuel shortages at gas stations, which is not necessarily accurate. There is a shortage of fuel fleet truck drivers. Everybody got laid off, and now to deliver
fuel to the stations, we don't have people.
We don't have people to do
that.
Gotcha. And it's mostly down in the southeast.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't believe we've seen anything up here yet. But some gas stations just don't have the supplies or the inventory, and they're waiting. They're waiting for their deliveries.
But it's just
something that happens. And, you know, if people start to panic and run out and start filling up their tanks when they only need a quarter of a tank, that may be a problem. You don't want to create an artificial shortage.
True. Yeah, we don't need to do like we did with the toilet paper in the beginning of the pandemic. It's unnecessary. We don't need to do that. But it sounds like we can at least prepare ourselves. If you are traveling for Memorial Day weekend, there's a very good chance these high gas prices are going to be about the same. They're not going to drop any time before that, it sounds like.
That's right. That's right. I don't think it will. But there are resources. You can go on TripTik, TripTik.AAA.com. You can map out your route that way. It identifies gas stations along the way. You can always make calls, you know, before you get to a particular state if you're, you know, you're driving, you know, cross state lines. Most folks for Memorial Day stay in-state, visit for picnics and things like
that.
And the fact that most of us are vaccinated now, this is making life much, much easier for us.
Yeah, it feels like a vacation, just being able to see family in person. That's very true. Fran Mako of AAA, thank you so much for all this information this morning. We'll talk again really soon.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Hey, what do you say we travel on into Ansonia this morning, where Mayor David Cassetti is, and he's here right now. And Mayor Cassetti, my gosh, things are booming in Ansonia. You guys have a lot of construction going on right now. Could you talk a little bit about it?
Sure. Good morning, Melissa and everybody. Yeah, the city's on fire. I mean, we got the new police station. We're going to be probably opening it up in June. This is a $15 million project. It's a state-of-the-art police facility, probably the premier in the state of Connecticut. We'll be having an open house probably in August because all of the incidentals got to get installed and for the EOC and everything. So that's what we're hoping for an August grand opening. And we'll have a ton of people going to be there. We got our river walk. The contractor is already working on 2 miles of river walk throughout our city. That's going to be a wonderful addition to our city. Looking forward to that. That should be opening up also around August. Our new apartments, they're already installing new windows and roof on the building. The cranes and scaffolds are already there. That's going to be working. They're hoping to have that rented by October. So, and then we got some projects on Main Street. Lighting and stuff like that for the restaurants. There's a lot of great things happening in Ansonia.
Okay, yeah,
and
I was going to say, go for it.
And today I got the food bank. I'm giving out 1,200 boxes of food to needy residents starting at 10:30 today at the Nolan Field and at the Abundant Life Church. I have ordered 1,200 boxes of them.
So people can just show up for that.
They could just show up, and I'll open up their trunk, and I'll put the food right inside the trunk.
That is awesome. Happening at 10:30 this morning. Now, Mayor Cassetti, I want to break down each of those things that you just brought up. Let's start with the police station. How soon can police move in there, and why was it essential to get them a new station?
Listen, we could have been in serious trouble with prisoners, and because you have to have separate cells for male, female, and juveniles. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have that at the current police station.
Oh, really?
Which was not following the guidelines. So now we have all that in the brand new police station. They're gonna be finished in it the end of June, but then we need to move everything in and get things moved. So hopefully, like mid-August, we'll have a grand opening and invite everybody, including yourself, to come on down and take a good look at it.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I think that's really exciting. And we're talking again to Mayor David Gassetti, of course, of the city of Ansonia. A lot of things happening right now in Ansonia. Now, the Riverwalk. I'm very excited about this. I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with Riverwalks, but I just know from my time living in Vermont, they had created a Riverwalk in Manchester, Vermont. It's one of the most beautiful sites, I think, in the entire state. I wanted to just hear a little bit about this Riverwalk. How long is it? Where exactly is it? I know it's not going to be open until August, but talk to us a little bit about this.
Okay, the Riverwalk is a continuation. It started on Division Street and continued up north Division Street to Pershing Drive. That's Section 8, the new one, and it's called Copper City Passway. And it starts there on Pershing Drive and continues down Bridge Street into the Target parking lot on Main Street in Ansonia and goes along the dike of the river for about 2 miles. It's going to be a state-of-the-art. I mean, this is going to be wonderful. I also wanted to add a second feature to that, which is a lighthouse on the top of the dike to show that we are a beacon to the valley here in Ansonia.
That is cool. I love that. Now, with the Riverwalk, I know some are different than others. Can people bike, push their strollers, or is this going to be mostly just for walking?
You can bike. You can walk your dog. You can bring your strollers up there. You can bring whatever you want.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Very, very cool.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
We're open to all that. I just want to give a shout out that this July 10th, I'm having a 10-band Beatle Fest up at the Nolan Field here in Ansonia. It's going to be a wonderful event for all the music lovers. So we're going to have 10 bands. Looking forward to that.
That is so cool. Are you going to be releasing the band names anytime soon?
Yes. Yes, probably in the next couple weeks we'll be releasing all the bands that are their cover bands that are going to be coming in.
Love cover bands. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Ansonia Mayor David Gassetti is here now. The apartments that you said you're hoping to get rented by October, where exactly are those? And are there any options for affordable housing?
Well, no, not in this. These are market rate apartments.
Okay.
They are on Main Street and East Main Street.
Oh, wow.
There's going to be approximately 400 apartments, market rate apartments, 1 and 2 bedrooms. And the developer has told me that he wants to have the commercial on the lower floors and then the next 3 floors have the apartments. And he wants to start with the top apartments first and hoping to have availability by October.
Have they started taking applications yet, do you know, Mayor Gassetti?
Yes, I believe the application process is starting in June. That's what he told me, the developer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Now, I just have to ask, Mayor Gassetti, you know, with all these projects going on, I was just curious, and it's okay if the answer is no, but are they opening up job opportunities in the city, even if it's just temporary? I have to imagine this is bringing in a lot of workers during, you know, we're still recovering from the pandemic. Like, I think it's great we're seeing so much action in Ansonia.
Yes, we are hiring. I mean, the developer is always looking for plumbers, carpenters, roofers. I have people that call me all the time saying, hey, these new apartments, do they need help there? So I put them people in contact with the developer. So, yes, there is job opportunities. And I am also hiring summer help here in Ansonia to help out with the litter pickup throughout the city because we have a lot of litter in town. And I'm hiring some part-timers, probably 3 or 4, to go pick up litter and cut grass and do different things.
That's great. So should they just contact the city and ask for you, or how do they apply?
I have applications here at the city of Ansonia. I'll give them the application, and then when the interviews start, they'll get a call.
Perfect. That's fantastic. Well, Ansonia Mayor David Gassetti, always a pleasure to talk to you and a lot going on. I can't wait to keep in touch with you in the next couple of weeks and see where we're at. That's exciting.
Very good, Melissa. Thank you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help.
Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Well, Julius, you always have the best topics. I love this. He goes, what if we talk about listening? This is a daily topic in our house, Julius. My husband has literally admitted that he only listens when it's necessary. And I'm only half joking because that truly is a conversation we have in our household, probably on a weekly basis. How are you this morning, Julius?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing wonderfully. Yeah. Yeah. Listening is a great topic. And it's all about really slowing yourself down. And we tend to be in such a hurried society. We rush, and we just don't take time to slow down and listen. And we're on our phones, and we're not focused. And it's all about me. And what do I have to do next? And mm-hmm. we just really, listening is a skill that's developed over time. And it really is an exhausting exercise to really listen well to other people.
Mm-hmm. And Julius, I obviously kind of like poke fun at my husband. I think he probably doesn't want to listen because, you know, well, who wants to listen to my voice? But, it's interesting. I find that a lot of people who don't listen, to me, it's kind of sad. I think listening almost is anxiety ridden for people because they're so focused on, well, how am I going to respond? Or I have a thought in my mind and I don't want to lose it. So they don't listen.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Right. And they're more concerned about themselves as mm-hmm. opposed to what the other person is really saying. And sometimes not listening may be their way of ignoring difficult feelings you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot. And that's okay because it's very common and very natural for people to not listen because I really don't want to talk about some of the deeper issues that are affecting you. But listening can be a skill that is learned. It can be a skill that is perfected in your life as you move forward, and it really will bring you more happiness, I feel, as you learn how to listen and as you learn how to focus on the other and watch your tone and the way you say things. I had a client just last week was telling me, you know, I heard myself I recorded myself in my conversation with my daughter, and I listened to myself, and I had to shut myself off because I didn't like my tone.
Oh, no.
Sometimes,
sure.
Yeah. We come at people with just so a negative tone and facial expression and body language and the whole nine yards. To listen effectively, it really encompasses your entire being.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Our morning show counselor, Julius Dudix, is here, and we're talking about being an effective listener. Julius, I'm curious because, like I said, a lot of times it's your anxiety or your inner, insecurity that kind of leads you to not being able to listen, and you're so focused on other things or you're more focused on what's in your mind versus what the person is saying. Have you found that being an effective listener has gotten harder? Like, has that become, I find that a lot of people actually don't know how to listen. And now, I'm not saying I'm a great listener, but I think because of my line of work in interviewing people every day, I literally have to listen or I sound like a bozo. So I have to literally listen. But I think a lot of people don't, like, actively practice how to listen. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a communication exercise I love to do with couples that I see. And it's really, you know, what is your spouse saying on the surface? You know, just verbatim, what's the content? And the second deeper level is how are they feeling? And for a lot of guys, sometimes it's very difficult to articulate how their wives are feeling. And the third level is then you respond to it. And quite often we don't even get to, we just go right to responding as opposed to what they're actually even saying. So those three levels, what's being said, you know, how are they feeling? What are some of the adjectives, descriptive words that could kind of help your spouse know that you're understanding, and then you respond to it. But we jump the gun a lot, and it's hard to get the focus off of yourself sometimes. But that's a skill, yeah.
And I was going to say, Julius, who do you think is the bigger offender? Because if I were to guess, I think we poke fun at men a lot because they, you know, they half listen or, oh, my nagging wife. I actually think women are bigger offenders because we are so juggling the kids or juggling social media or I'm trying to work or I've got 500 things going on in my head. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think there's a stigma that like, oh, men don't listen. I would say that I find I have a harder time having conversations with women a lot of the time.
Sure. And women tend to try to multitask.
Yes.
And that's, their focus gets all over the place, and that prevents, you know, them from effectively listening. Mm. But if you just, again, it's all about slowing down and keeping your eyes on the speaker not looking around. You talk to people before where you're talking with them and they're looking all over the street or all over, you know, wherever, and their eyes aren't focused on you.
Mm-hmm.
Concentrate on what's being said. A lot of times we prejudge in our own head. And when we start prejudging, then we tend to lose what the person's really saying. And we tend to interrupt a lot also while we're listening. But it's a skill to let somebody just really, I call it reflective listening. Mm-hmm. Let them say what they want to say and then reflect what they're saying and ask for clarification. Is this, you know, this how you're feeling? Or can you help me understand that? Or can you explain that in a different way? But that's all part of the whole skill of learning how to be a better listener. Learning how to read people's emotions is another, you know, body language and so forth.
And our counselor, Julius Dudix, is here. Julius, this might sound like a silly question, but would even silly things like, I remember in elementary school, they would say, like, practice your speech in the mirror or something. Like, are there little tricks or tips to being a better listener?
Yeah, the biggest thing I would say would be a really in terms of when somebody is saying something to you in your brain, just rehearse what they're saying.
Oh, okay.
In terms of making eye contact, look at their nose. You know, in elementary school, I could remember having a teacher say, you know, in terms of personal, they were talking about personal skills, mm-hmm. and developing personal skills. Look at the person's nose if you're afraid to look in their eyes. But try to make body contact, body language contact with the other individual. And again, in your head, where's your internal dialogue when the other person's speaking?
Mm-hmm.
Are you too focused on me and how I could respond? Or are you more focused on what the person's really saying, how they're feeling, and what they're going through?
Mm-hmm.
And then ask probing questions, you know, as you kind of go along in conversation to make sure the person knows that you understand how they feel. But it's a skill that it can be developed, and but it takes really purpose and passion. And
yeah.
You've got to acknowledge, hey, I need to be a better listener.
Yeah.
You know, I need to take time to do that. And again, a lot of it is slowing down and putting down the cell phone and just saying, I want to listen to my spouse. I want to listen to my child. I need to put away all distractions,
mm-hmm.
slow down, you know, just kind of focus on the other individual and give yourself that time.
Yeah.
That's a relational builder.
Totally, totally. Maybe even counting to 10. That always works, too. Julius Dudix, our morning show counselor, thank you so much. Always appreciate having you on the show. We really appreciate you.
All right, Melissa. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.